Continuing with our examination of the process of impeachment, how it's being applied to President Trump, any act of impeachment relies on Article 2, Section 4 of our Constitution, which lays out what a president, vice president, and other civil officials can be impeached for. The key phrase in this section is high crimes and misdemeanors. Did the Founding Fathers leave how to define that open, as some people think, or can their intent actually be determined? With us now to discuss this is a tenured constitutional law professor who is now senior fellow in constitutional jurisprudence at the Independence Institute in Denver. He's also author of the book, The Original Constitution, What It Actually Said and Meant. There's an interesting concept, isn't it, these days? Professor Rob Nadelson, how are you today, sir?
I'm great, and it's wonderful to be back with you, Chris.
And likewise to talk with you. Website for the Independence Institute, the number 2i.org. So, as I said in the introduction, high crimes and misdemeanors. Now, for someone who has read the Constitution, I think even the novice can say it pretty well defines everything, but yet so many people take the impeachment clause, Section 2, Article 2, Section 4, in a more vague way. Is there any reason for that vagueness, or is it actually more concrete than people give it credit to be?
It has been a subject of a lot of discussion among constitutional scholars. And really, the constitutional scholars and others have fallen into one of three camps. There are those who say that the president cannot be impeached and removed from office. And, of course, impeachment means an accusation of a crime by the House of, or excuse me, accusation of a wrong by the House of Representatives. And then there's a trial in the Senate. Some people take the position that the only grounds for impeachment and removal from office is the actual commission of a crime. The problem with that is that the Constitution doesn't merely say high crimes. It also says high misdemeanors. So it's clear that some events that are technically not criminal can be the basis for impeachment. Over on the other side, there are folks, and the most famous exemplar of this was Gerald Ford, when he was minority leader of the House of Representatives, took a position that impeachment can be done for anything that the Congress wants. Well, that's clearly wrong, too, because if that were the case, the Constitution wouldn't have specified that impeachment is for treason, bribery, other high crimes, and misdemeanors. It just would have put in a blanket authorization for impeachment. The truth is somewhere in between those, and we can get that truth not just by reading the Constitution and not just in that section of the Constitution, but also by looking at history, specifically the history of impeachments as the people who adopted the Constitution understood it. And they provide us with valuable guidance as to what the term high misdemeanors means.
Because a lot of people, again, who haven't studied the Constitution to a serious degree don't realize what the foundation was. It wasn't that the Founding Fathers were carbon copying something from what was still at that point in time technically their homeland, Great Britain, but the law and structure of Britain had some influence on what became the law and structure of the Constitution, did it not?
It was pretty close to a carbon copy in this instance, not in all instances, of course, but in the case of impeachment, yes. There had been impeachment trials dating back to the 1300s. And what happened in Britain was articles of impeachment, that the accusation was brought by the House of Commons, the lower house, and then it was tried in the House of Lords. And the founders' understanding of that history was essentially that the Commons, or as they put it in the Constitution, the House of Representatives, would have the power to bring this accusation by a majority vote, and that the Senate would then try it. But the history also taught them that in addition to crimes, officers could be removed from office for this term high misdemeanors. And what specifically that meant in modern terms is a breach of fiduciary duty or a breach of trust. You know, if you know anything about the duties to which bankers are subject or trustees or lawyers or really any responsible agent, their obligations like faithfully representing the person who hired you and being honest and preparing accurate financial accounts and exercising a certain amount of due care and diligence, those are all what we call fiduciary duties, and if you breach them, you can be in trouble. But it's not a mere policy difference is not a breach of fiduciary duties. I mean, the fact that Democrats in the House profoundly disagree with President Trump's policies and think they're wrong and so forth, that's not clearly a ground for impeachment. Differences of opinions, well, one of our greater founders, Edmund Randolph, pointed out that nobody ever thought about impeaching someone for a difference of opinions. So when you read this record, what you find is that there's got to be not necessarily a crime, but some specific breach of trust that the president is guilty of. One other point to add to this, Chris, the legal standard, the fact that it is a legal standard, is underscored by two other provisions in the Constitution. One is that when the Senate tries impeachments, it is on oath or affirmation. That is to say, every senator has to take an oath or affirmation. They don't have to do that with other resolutions or legislation. It's only impeachments. And secondly, when the president is tried, the presiding officer in the Senate is the Chief Justice of the United States, not some officer of the Senate, not some politician, but the Chief Justice of the United States. So it underscores the serious legal nature of the proceeding.
Talking with Professor Rob Nadelson, who is Senior Fellow in Constitutional Jurisprudence at the Independence Institute. The number 2i.org is their website, and you're listening to Issues and Ideas. So in effect, someone would be guilty of high crimes and misdemeanors if they fail to honor the responsibilities of their job versus doing something outside the realm of their job. Would that be a fair?
If someone did something, well, politicians in office do things outside the realm of their job all the time. I mean, campaigning for re-election is a great example of that. So that's certainly not an impeachable offense. What would be an impeachable offense would be, say, disloyalty to the United States, or simply not doing the job, you know, sitting in the Oval Office and, oh, I don't know, maybe engaging in sexual acts instead of doing the job. That would be an impeachable offense. There have been two presidents that have been impeached. Andrew Johnson, who was impeached for allegedly violating a law that was later determined by the U.S. Supreme Court to be unconstitutional. And then, of course, Bill Clinton, who indubitably committed a felony while in office, specifically the felony of perjury in a sexual harassment case brought against him. Now, the story of Clinton, though, demonstrates that even though he was impeached, the Senate refused to convict even though he had committed what the Constitution calls a high crime. So the fact that the president's committed a crime, that may be sufficient, a felony specifically, that may be sufficient to remove him from office, but it's not, it may be necessary to remove him from office under the high crimes language, but it's not always sufficient, that sometimes he'll get off even if he has committed a crime. At this point, don't know that anyone has clear evidence that President Trump committed crimes while in office. The charge is he's committed high misdemeanors. From what I've seen thus far, the case seems pretty flimsy.
Well, especially if you look at the transcript of the call of the Ukraine president, because it's being interpreted of as saying, get me some dirt on Joe Biden and his family. But you also construe it as saying, alerting the new president of the Ukraine that, you know, your country in the past, no fault of yours, had a pretty heavy-duty level of corruption. Here's one example you might want to look at.
Yeah, and there's also the example of the story of Russian interference in the 2016 election, which had Ukraine connections, which was also obliquely mentioned in the transcript. Heads of state exchange information like this all the time. It's kind of as far as I can tell, it's almost an unwritten code among heads of states that they sort of build each other up. I mean, if think, for example, the relationship between President Trump and Prime Minister Netanyahu. I mean, it's a relationship of constant public backslapping, mutual backslapping. And that's fairly typical. I mean, if you want good relationships with another head of state, you don't go over his head and tell his people, this guy's awful, you need to get rid of him. You cooperate with him, you build him up, generally soft soap him. And in the case of President Zelensky of the Ukraine, he's elected on an anti-corruption platform. There is certainly reason to believe that there has been some corruption by members of the Biden family involving Ukraine. I don't see how it's a problem to urge him to investigate it. There's certainly no evidence of threats at all. On the contrary, it appears that Senator Chris Murphy of Connecticut, a Democrat, may have been the one who was guilty of threats in talking to Zelensky and saying that unless Zelensky played ball with the Democratic majority in the House of Representatives, they weren't going to get any funding. That happened some time ago. So it's a little, in some ways, it's baffling to me that the Democrats are raising this impeachment thing now, because I think it could backfire on them. But as far as the Constitution is concerned, political differences aren't sufficient. There's going to have to be specific proof of breach of fiduciary duties or felonies committed.
And certainly you need more going into it than a so-called whistleblower telling me, somebody told me, somebody told them that somebody did this.
Yeah, right. I think that's one reason why the Constitution specifies that the Chief Justice presides. The Chief Justice is in a position to make sure that the trial in the Senate, and that's what it is, a trial. It's not just a hearing. That the trial in the Senate is conducted according to legal standards. And, boy, that's hearsay if I've ever heard of it.
His book is The Original Constitution, What It Actually Said and Meant. He is also senior fellow in constitutional jurisprudence at the Independence Institute. Their website, the number 2i.org. Professor Rob Nadelson, thanks so much for the education today.
Thank you. It's been fun.